putting the brakes on Lot J. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a nice weekend. Just ahead, we speak with Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri on that Lot J deal and why he says it's too soon to take a vote on the controversial proposal. Where do you stand on Lot J? What are your questions? This is your chance to connect with Council President Hazzouri. Call us now, 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you how you can pick up a really cool luminaria kit for your yard this season and support a good cause, too. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the coronavirus pandemic. Some good news. For the first time in 3 days, COVID-19 cases in Florida have dipped below the 10,000 mark. The Florida Department of Health reports 8,436 new positive cases around the state and 93 new deaths. More than a million people have been infected statewide, and more than 19,000 Florida residents have died. That's the latest this morning. Keep masking up, everyone. In other news now, the leader of the Jacksonville City Council has kicked discussion over the Lot J development proposal into next year. Council President Tommy Hazzouri says he and his colleagues on the council need more time to study the proposal before they take a vote on it. Now, the city is looking to spend more than $230 million in taxpayer money and loans to pay for this proposed development next to TIAA Bank Field. The idea is to beef up the sports complex, activate it with a lot more stuff, live entertainment, bars, restaurants, office space, and retail. Let's get the very latest on this. We're pleased to welcome Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri. Actually, I think we might have just lost him. We'll try to get him back on the line now as we talk about the Lot J deal. And to provide everybody a little background before we connect with President Hazzouri, there was a pretty tense Jacksonville City Council meeting over this proposal last Thursday. Some back and forth between the council president and some of his colleagues on the council. What he is proposing that we do now is kick the project, the vote on it, to early or mid-January. In a statement that Hazzouri released over the weekend, he, in somewhat veiled language, accused the mayor's administration of strong-arming the city council and rushing this whole thing in the same way that the push to privatize JEA was handled. Okay, I think we have Tommy Hazzouri on the line now. President Hazzouri, Council President Hazzouri, are you there?
I am.
Okay,
somehow
great.
I got cut off.
All right. Great to get you on the phone. We already have some calls waiting on you. We will go to your calls for Tommy Hazzouri in a few minutes. It's 549-2937. Give us a call as we talk about Lot J. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Okay. You released this statement over the weekend basically saying it's time to call a timeout, to use a football term, on Lot J, not vote on this until January. What motivated you to make this move?
Well, thanks, Melissa. It's a great question. It wasn't about motivation. As much as having that council committee of the whole last Thursday, when I asked Mr. Harden, who represents the Jaguars, if why, and it wasn't about being rushed, which we are, and the pressure's coming, you know, from the administration and sort of indirectly from the Jaguars, but about having it done before the end of the year for the tax purposes or whatever it might be. But, you know, we just received this bill, or we haven't really. We don't even have it in our hands now, but third or fourth version, and we're still waiting on that. And they expect us to turn this thing around this week in 36 hours or 30 hours, whatever the time may be now. But, you know, first of all, it's very difficult to hear the bill on Tuesday. We have 50 pages of legislation for our council meeting tomorrow. And we would be there till 6 or 7 in the morning or even the next day just dealing with this bill alone, because it would be the last on the agenda. And then, if we didn't do it then, they'd want to do it on the 8th, which is the last day before the council has their winter break. I've tried to provide, I said, what's a fair way? I'm as tired as they are, or maybe fatigued, in not having the all the particulars. We still don't have it. There's nothing in front of us. And to go there and take each amendment one by one that they're including in this new version, wherever it may be. So I said, let me provide a pathway to finally get to a vote. And that pathway would be, once we get the legislation, take it over the holidays, read it, call our council auditor, call the Jaguar organization, call the administration, whomever they want to talk to, talking about the members, and get whatever answers before we get back after the first of the year. And that would be having another committee of the whole on the 7th of January, which is the first week of committees, committee meetings when we get back from winter break. And then spend all day long. I'm not going to have a time limit to ask the questions, get the answers, and feel comfortable that they're prepared to vote. And that's fine if they want to vote it out then, which I would expect that they would want to, the council. And then it would go the following Tuesday, two or three days later, on the 12th, to the full city council for a vote. And
okay. Let me just jump in.
Pathway.
Let me just let everybody know we're speaking with Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri. What are your questions, comments about the Lot J deal? 549-2937. This is an enormous amount of taxpayer money, perhaps the biggest public incentives deal this city has ever done. Certainly, the UNF poll taken on this shows that the majority of voters do have questions and do support your move to do some more vetting of this deal before you sign off on it on the city council. When you released this statement, you tied the push to get the Lot J deal done to the failed attempt to privatize JEA and the rush to get that through the process. Why did you do that?
Well, in this comparison, it's like JEA 2.0. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's clear as the night and day. It's a, last December, we stopped the JEA privatization proposal, especially with this PUP that they were doing, where millions of dollars would be given to selected people. And all this time, Mr. Zahn, who was then the executive director and in the administration and whomever else was involved, the board, the JEA board at that time, we have a new board now, saying the sky is falling. Well, they're doing the same thing with the Jaguars. If you don't do it, we're leaving. Now, the Jaguars hadn't been as prominent in saying that as much as the mayor has been doing. You know, we've got a lot of issues surrounding.
Are you concerned that if the Lot J deal doesn't get done, that the Jaguars will leave town?
No, I'm not. And I think all I'm asking the Jaguars, and I'm tired of asking the administration, to be honest with you, to give the opportunity for us to understand fully and to ask the questions and to get some serious answers. And I didn't want to go into any details in that press release, but I'm talking about the $65 million interest-free. There's a number of councilmen are asking that. I think Councilman Becton has 26 questions that he's asked and hadn't gotten answers on. I've had a few amendments from other members, including myself, a callback. And it's not about me, and it's not about just the members, but they haven't had a chance to discuss and debate some of their concerns, and much less that of the council auditor. We rely on our council auditor to be our watchdog. They did a great job with the JEA, and they helped stop that in its tracks last year before they did a hurry-up offense to get this bill out, to get it privatized. And they did the same thing by the questions that they're asking and the concerns that they're expressing today. And they haven't gotten fully all the answers that they need. Some of the key questions that they ask, they're not even including in this new proposal, which I haven't seen. And it's not fair to the taxpayers. It's not fair to the council. I'm giving them a pathway. They've spent 2, 3, 4 years on this development. We received it less than 2 months ago, and then it was incomplete when we got it. We had to delay it 2 more weeks to get the financials for the parking lot.
You can't reduce
a bill without a complete bill.
Let me say that we have requested an interview with the Jaguars front office about this. Their chief legal officer, Megha Parekh, did tell Channel 4 over the weekend that the Lot J deal is an opportunity for the River City. She said it's not just about sustaining the Jaguars, but it's about making what exists here viable for additional uses and bigger events. The mayor's chief of staff, Jordan Ellsbury, also spoke to our news partner, Channel 4, and said it is unclear why delaying policy decisions in downtown development is needed if members are ready to vote. What's your response to that, Council President Hazuri?
That's a bunch of bunk. And I wouldn't trust Jordan Ellsbury or any of them in the administration today to speak the truth about this. They want this thing passed, and they want it passed now.
And do you think that they want it passed because a city council committee report is coming out about the JEA affair? Is the timing of that at all related to this rush on Lot J?
You're asking me a question, and that's more personal for me to answer. If I had to say yes, that would be a very good yes to give you. But, you know, and I'm on that committee, so I can't really discuss that now. I replaced Scott Wilson, who is out, and I appointed myself to replace him. He was a former president and did a great job getting this investigation committee started. There will be a report coming out the 1st of January, by the way. But, no, it has, and to hear that the votes are there, you know, it takes 2/3 votes. Why would they expect us to make the decisions when they couldn't do a good enough job? I don't expect the developer not to want to get the best deal he can get. I don't care if it's Mr. Khan, a billionaire or a millionaire, any of the developers are going to want to get the best deal. And they certainly did get that. I think it was poor negotiations on the part of the administration if they negotiated at all. But I'm, you know, we're at where we're at right now. So I'm providing a pathway. What's a couple of 3 weeks later to address this bill, to have a pathway, and
okay,
vote and up or down?
Jammed lines, meanwhile, for City Council President Tommy Hazuri. It's your chance to weigh in on the Lot J proposal. Let's go to your calls now. Cynthia in Lakeshore. Hi, Cynthia. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Cynthia. Okay, Cynthia, you might have put us on hold. We'll try you in a moment. Brian in St. John's County. Hi, Brian. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm very pleased to hear that the City Council has decided to reserve a decision for at least 30 days on this Lot J deal. I don't think it's something that should be rushed into. I think that's very irresponsible indeed. I have my opinion about that deal. I don't like the idea that it's going to be underwater in 50 years. I won't be here, but the grandkids are still going to be paying that loan off if it's given 50 years from now. I don't think it's a very good idea at all. Frankly, there's been an awful lot of discussion about the money involved here, $260 million or something, some figure similar to that. I notice the discussion has dropped off not holding Mayor Kerr responsible for that $260,000 giveaway to the Republican Party to bring a convention here that never occurred. Somebody needs to be on the hook for that. I think Curry should be on the hook for that. I'd like to see that money given back to the taxpayers of Duval County. I'm not a Duval resident. I live in St. John's, but I spend enough time in Jacksonville, a nice place to visit, a nice place to hang out, but then I have a growing interest and affection. So I think
okay,
that money
Brian.
Should be restored to the taxpayer.
Thank you, Brian. You know, let me begin by his first point, Tommy Hazuri. There hasn't been a deep vet given to resiliency issues around this project. It will go up near the water. There is a flooding risk, and it will increase with time. Is that another issue that your body needs to look at before you sign off?
And they are, and some of those questions are coming. Ms. DeFore, who chairs our resiliency committee, special committee on resiliency, and Mr. Carlucci, who is on that committee, and, you know, he's been outspoken as well. And, you know, let me just make everything clear. This is not a delay. This is a responsible action on the part of the council president on behalf of the city council. Now, I haven't talked to them about what I just released. I'm hoping that they'll see that they'll have time to do what they need to do. I want to mention something really quickly. It was $153,000 that was spent by the administration. They said they weren't going to use any tax dollars, which obviously they did. I contacted members of the Republican Party, the chairman here in town, for raising these funds, their special committee that they had to raise these funds, they returned the check. And it wasn't their fault. It was the administration on their own. They thought they were going to get the money from the federal government, and which they didn't because they canceled the meeting. And they never committed to doing that. So the money came from the party, and they didn't really have to do it. And I give them credit. Now, the administration says, well, they've been working with them to do it. I don't care who gets credit for it. The important thing is we received $153,000 back.
Okay. David on the south side. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Melissa.
Go ahead.
Melissa. Hi, Tommy.
Hi, David.
Tommy, I just want to say I appreciate it very much as a resident of Duval County that you're going through this process. I don't particularly don't care to see something like this get rubber stamped. In my opinion, if this is a privately funded project, it'd go through a year to economic study before it was even considered. A couple things I'd like to mention. I'm not sure the mixed use is going to be used in the Lot J project, but, you know, in 6 or 8 months, we're going to see a glut of commercial real estate. All this stuff needs to be studied before we invest $230 million on a project when we've got other obligations like the pension fund and things like that. It just feels like a bad time to start such a large project with tax dollars in a, you know, during a pandemic and a downturn. Really, we're not going to know what the economy is going to look like until mid next year or even beyond third quarter next year. I just want to say thank you, Tommy, for taking, you know, taking the ball on this and making sure that, you know, the citizens of Duval County are looked out for. Second thing I'd like to mention, you know, I would tell the Jaguars organization, you bring us a Super Bowl trophy, we'll be more than happy to get started tomorrow.
All right, David.
That's all I'd like to say.
Thank you, David. Tommy Azuri, two big points there that I think you're hearing from a lot of constituents. One, the timing of this, given the economics of the pandemic. And two, the performance of the team. Now, what about Jaguars president Mark Lamping pushing back on that and saying, look, you have to think more long term than just how badly the Jaguars are doing right now, that this is a long term investment in the city?
Well, I understand that, but it's one issue at a time. Now, if they bundled the extension, if they bundled the renovation to NFL standards, as we know we have to do, like every NFL city, and if they wanted to throw in the hotel at the same time, I'd like to know what the ultimate number is going to be eventually, but they didn't do that. And so I accept the fact that what we have in front of us is one development project, build it, and they will come. Now, that's philosophical, and in addition to the financial part of it. So I'm not going to get into a discussion. I don't mean me personally, but it's not up for discussion now because this is what they want, this is what they want to do, and this is when they want to do it. But when you've got 7 to 9 years before this project would be completed and they don't want to wait 2 or 3 weeks over the holidays, shame on them. And I don't say that. Look, I'm not taking anything away from the Jaguars. I love them here. Like I said earlier, I've been a 25-year charter member, owner of a ticket. I helped after Jake Godbout left. I made it our number one economic development priority to bring an NFL franchise to Jacksonville. I think it is very good for Jacksonville. I want them to be here a long, long time. But, you know, at what price?
It's my understanding that the deal that's on the table isn't structured for you on the council to negotiate a lease extension. But what about that? What about the pleas from all the fans out there that in order to sign off on this expensive deal, the city should at least get the team to commit to a lease extension?
Well, I think that's a legitimate question. Now, they say that the NFL won't do that. I don't know. You know, I haven't seen anything to say yes or no about it, but that's what the Jaguars have said, that the lease extension. But we don't even, you know, we're going to get into the details now. And, you know, one of the amendments I have is a clawback provision, which means that if they leave at any time within a certain period, that they'll have to pay us back the monies that we've spent so far. And that's if they take the team out of town. But these are questions that they don't want to do that. We did it. They've done it before in the lease, before I was on the council, and, you know, even years back. And so they didn't even consider it. And again, it's not about that, but I think that should be vetted. No development any large-size development has been without a clawback or two or three or four, which means, you know, we want some safety. I do not want to be, I've used this term and it may sound a little trite, but I don't end up owning the shaft and they get the uranium mine. And they being, it's not Jacksonville. There's nothing for them to lose dollar-wise. We're having to put the money up front. But now I'm getting into the debate on the pros and cons. I want this project if it meets
okay.
you know, the standards that the council wants.
Okay, yeah. And don't mean to cut you off, just that lots of folks waiting on hold. We are speaking now with Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri. He has kicked the Lot J vote into next year. What are your questions? Let's go now to Cynthia in Lakeshore. She's back on the line. Hi, Cynthia. Good morning. Cynthia, don't tell me you can't hear us again. Okay, Cynthia.
Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
I just wanted to thank Tommy so much for using such good judgment to really study this more carefully. And I just... you can't hear me?
No, go ahead, please. Finish your thought.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to thank Tommy so much for using the good judgment to look into this very thoroughly. And I would personally plead the council not to approve our spending any amount of money on this project. Because there are so many needs that we have in the city of Jacksonville.
Okay, we're losing you a little bit, Cynthia, but we took your point. That's Cynthia in Lakeshore. You know, you're getting a lot of positive feedback on this show right now for this move. What are you and your colleagues on the council hearing from constituents out there about this? What's the tone of the feedback?
Well, you know, I can't ask them. I hear what they say at the council meetings. And again, you don't want to just go by emails and all, but if you're on the street, and that's my livelihood, I mean, I've been doing this all my life, and hearing the people, and you hear the council, they want some questions asked. I think Mr. Ferrero said it best when he said that he wants to be able to explain to his constituents why he voted yes or no on this, and he doesn't have all of the knowledge about the bill yet, and the questions answered, and he's not ready to vote for it. But I think if I had to guess that the majority of the council, or two-thirds or more, will support this in the end. But, you know, it's not unreasonable, again, to get the questions asked and answered. And, you know, somehow we're getting, especially from the administration, we're getting bunkered. And, you know, again, it's not about just the council. We have to make that financial decision. We're responsible as fiduciary holders of the Treasury here in Jacksonville, and to do our due diligence, and above all, which hasn't been done, is to provide transparency in this whole deal. Same thing happened in the JEA. There's too many players involved from the past and the present. So, you know, it's deja vu all over again.
And lots of feedback on social media coming in as we speak with Tommy Hazzouri about the Lot J deal. Echoing what you just said, a listener tweets, "We need transparency about Lot J and not another backroom deal." Here's another listener. "This is the right move. No reason to rush this through. Get the full cost of making Mr. Khan and the NFL happy and present it as a package." Here's another tweet. "Shouldn't the decision on Lot J have come before taking down the ramps to the Hart Bridge?" What about that? Because those ramps have already come down to prepare for this deal, to prepare for this project.
I think they needed the money as soon as they could get it. And then I guess, I don't know what the details are on that. I know we're putting up money, the state's putting up money, the federal government's putting up money. They have taken those ramps down. They said it was for the trucks to go by. Well, you can guess what it was. And, you know, again, it's a, it's the, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? I think they were very assured in their own minds that this bill was going to pass and it would be over. We'd have the ramps down and we'd be underway the next 7 to 9 years building a Lot J, the apartments, the live entertainment, the office buildings, and all, I mean, the office facilities and all the rest. Again, it's the same way that with the JDA, and I don't mean to keep going back there, but the MO is the same. And, you know, again, this is a pathway. This is not a delay. I think Councilman Bowman was quoted as saying it's just another delay tactic. Heck no, it's not a delay tactic. It's the right tactic, and it's not a tactic. It's strategic for this city council and for our taxpayers to know what's going on.
Speaking of your colleagues on the city council, I want to ask you on the record about something that's come to my attention from some sources on the council that don't want to lend their names to this information, but we have heard that there has even been a move on the council to potentially see if there are votes by those who oppose you on this to oust you as council president. What's your reaction to that?
Good luck. I've heard those rumors. You know, I was elected to lead, and what I do on this council, I would be doing as a council member as well as a council president. And I'm going to continue to lead and do what I think is the right thing. I don't know that they would ever have the votes to do something like that. And I think it's preposterous. I think it's a couple of people on the council, like you were saying earlier, that have some kind of I don't want to describe how it is, have, you know, their own personal vendetta. They don't have the power that they maybe once had. And now they're trying to undermine everything we're trying to do. And even our Social Justice and Community Investment Committee, which we will address some of the issues that go beyond the J-Lot, and that's taking care of our infrastructure and have been left behind since consolidation that people will continue to talk about. We will address that this year, rest assured. But as far as the other, they said, well, that's an elite committee. Was all the chairmen of our council standing committees, and most of them were Republicans. So anybody, and I think that may be the other thing, you know, I'm not going to get into the petty politics of it. I'm sure there's some that would like to see me go. I'm the first Democrat president of the council since Eric Smith, I think, 20-some-odd years ago, and Warren Jones. But I don't look at it as being a Democrat or Republican. And there's no turn that you take to be the next council president. They're already jockeying for who's going to be the next president now. But that always is what goes on in a council. And they want, you know, the leadership, they want to do it. But, you know, I think I've done a pretty good job. We've taken some hard stances. And that's what I was elected to do. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to get as much done this year as any council president's ever done.
Let's get in one more call for Tommy Hizzuri. Julian in Arlington. Hello, Julian.
Hey, Melissa. Love y'all. Quickly, I piggyback on what you just said because I was an educator. I spoke up, and basically I was kind of like good old boy system out where they're going to, quote, unquote, get you. And everything that's been happening, I see it as, you know, this is what they do. Y'all know what I mean by they. They don't like you. They don't like you speaking up. Tommy, I was born in the 80s, so I've known him my whole life in Jacksonville. He knows what's going on because he's been in there. So he knows the ins and outs, and that scares them. And instead of them doing right, they try to basically do a smear campaign against you or your family to get you removed. I live in Arlington. Them removing the ramp has been a nightmare. Any given day, there's an accident on the Matthews Bridge. We can't get across the river. If you don't know the city and know how to go, Cessory and Atlantic, et cetera, et cetera. So that was super selfish. The homeless, I drive through downtown every day, and they should be ashamed of themselves. It's blocks and blocks of homeless people, but they want to spend this much money on sports. That is what's wrong with our country. We have our priorities messed up and misaligned. And just keep up the good fight. We need to rally around him. We need to rally around everyone, Republican or Democrat, that is trying to do the right thing, because they think that they can make us have fear and then they get their way. Good job, Jacksonville, in the presidential. Let's keep going, and let's get you-know-who out of office.
Okay, Julian. You know, Tommy Hizzuri, I think that caller expressed a lot of the frustration over this deal. They're questioning the city's overall priorities on where we allocate our tax dollars. You know, I think that's why you're hearing the support out there for additional scrutiny of this deal, given the times that we're in right now. We're coming up to a break, but can you set the table for us what we can expect in the coming weeks?
Well, if all goes the way I think it could go and should go and hope the council agrees is that we have a cooling off period, and I don't mean in a hostile way that we haven't had a cooling off period, but to be able to look and digest and understand what the new proposal is going to be. We still don't have it in front of us. We won't have the time to deal with it on tomorrow's council meeting. And to have a special meeting on Friday, just before we adjourn for the holidays, and the holidays notwithstanding, just to have a special meeting when we can take it over and study it over the holidays, come back on the 7th, have a committee of the whole again with the council, hear it out all day. I'm not setting a time limit for when we adjourn, and finally get it resolved if we can, if they want to vote on it, 2/3 vote, send it up to a majority, really, in the committee, and send it to the council on the following Tuesday. The first, it's not going to be next year. It's not pushing it to another year. It sounds like we're going to take it down the road for another 12 months. We're not. We've only had it for 2 months, and what's a few weeks, and the 12th of January, they could vote it up or down. But at least it's a pathway to get there, a destination of what we're going to do. This is the plan. Study it, understand it, amend whatever you want to offer, whatever amendments you want to make.
We will follow it very closely, and I want to thank you for your time and engaging with all the listeners out there on this. Have a great holiday, and thanks for being on the show.
Melissa, let me also add one thing separate from this. PBS is having their 50th anniversary.
That's right. They are.
Congratulations, and I hope that all of you continue longer than Lot J. y'all have done great service for this nation.
Well, thank you for that.
Certainly hate to see that go away, and it won't. I think y'all do wonders.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Council President Tommy Hazzouri. And yes, PBS is celebrating 50 years this month, so that is something else to note. Okay, a quick break and much more still ahead on the show later in the hour.
One of the biggest things we do each year is we build these luminaria kits for the community. 10 candles and 2 bags of sand, some white bags to put the luminaria in, along with a card that tells you a little bit about how the person works and who built your kit.
How you can buy luminaria this holiday, decorate your house, and support a great cause. But up next, a conversation with new LISC CEO Pedro Cohen. We'll be right back. Well, the local nonprofit Pinecastle. I skipped ahead to the wrong page. We're going to go to LISC Jacksonville, the local initiative support corporation. They're announcing Dr. Irvin Pedro Cohen as their new executive director after an extensive search following the passing of a great lady, Janet Owens, earlier this year. Now, Mr. Cohen will lead LISC into a new decade, and their mission is more vital to this city than ever right now. Pedro Cohen is on the line to tell us all about it. Pedro, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm so glad to see that you've been tapped for this position. They made a very smart move here. taking on the mantle of the late Janet Owens, who led LISC so well for so long. Congratulations, first of all.
Well, thank you so much, and you are absolutely correct. Janet was a phenomenal lady and an even better leader, and I am very fortunate to be following in her footsteps.
Now, let's talk, for those who aren't familiar with LISC, the Local Initiative Support Corporation, all about your mission and what you do in the community. Educate all our listeners about the work of LISC.
Sure. The vision of LISC is really to really connect every low-income community and provide them with an opportunity to thrive. I think specifically our mission is to really provide capital, strategy, and know-how for those communities to become places not only where people thrive, but they also want to live. And we do that in the specific spaces of housing, health, education, public safety, and employment.
And this mission has always been important, but in the times that we're in now, I think the work of LISC is more important than ever. Can you talk about the biggest challenges that we're seeing in this community, particularly as this year has gone on and we've seen so much pain and economic stress, the toll of the pandemic and unemployment? What are the biggest pain points you're working to address? And tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. I think for me, I think the two things that are obvious to me really right out the box is the threshold associated with education, the threshold associated with health, and also public safety. I think if you look at the number of murders that happen throughout our city, they happen directly in communities that LISC want to be involved in or are doing some work in. And then I think the some of the challenges that we see surrounding education are very, very evident in those communities that LISC does their work in. You know, one of the things that I, you know, said that, it, you know, if we had, you know, educational gaps before the pandemic, those gaps would be exacerbated after the pandemic. And I think if you look at research that's being put out now nationally, you see all of that coming to pass. And so LISC is very, very, very purposeful in our work in those communities, and I'm excited just to be a part of that and changing the dynamics associated with people who live in those communities.
Sure. And, you know, you come to this from a great background, you know, former VP at the First Coast YMCA, former executive director of the Newtown Success Zone. You have a long track record of working to lift up distressed communities. How did you come to this work? How did you get involved in the beginning?
You know, I think the work chose me. I didn't choose it. And, you know, I tell people every day, I think the universe gave me the opportunity to do all the things that I wanted to do prior to sort of falling into the success zone. And but the universe has a way of getting the right people in the right places around you. And thanks to people like Linda Lanier, former Sheriff Nat Glover, and Pam Paul for seeing that I had the capacity to do this work and sort of guiding me on a path to what I consider my life's work. And so I'm very thankful to them. I'm very thankful to this community for supporting the work that I've done in both of those locations at the YMCA and at Newtown. And now I look forward to bringing that same track record to LISC.
You know, in the earlier segment, we were talking with the city council president about Lot J and taking calls mm-hmm. from listeners saying, you know, the city, in the minds of some voters out there anyway, this city has its priorities out of whack. We've got a lot of homeless people. We've got a big crime problem. We've got a lot of people struggling just to make ends meet. And it doesn't sit well with them that the city is poised to spend hundreds of millions in taxpayer money on downtown development in these times. And so I want to ask you a little bit about that. Do you think this city's priorities are out of whack? And do we need a reordering of priorities? I mean, as we heard Council President Hazuri say, there's a social justice committee on the city council looking to address some longstanding inequities in this town. What are your thoughts about all this?
Well, I, you know, I'm still early on in the process. I have my personal opinion around the city's priorities, but I think, you know, my personal priorities don't necessarily reflect well, you know, may not necessarily reflect the organizational goals of LISC. But I do think that we do have work to do in some of our struggling communities. And I think those things have to be front and center as we move our city forward. You can't have a lot, Jay, when you have a 169 murders, I think, that have happened in our city. I think those things have to be one and the same. But I also think that in order to be a top-tier city and to attract the types of businesses and young people that we want to see here and help our city grow, there has to be things that that really, really, really attract them here. Lot J is one of those things that I think has the capacity to attract people here, but you also have to do that in alignment with making sure our city is safe. You have to do that with making sure that there are neighborhoods people want to live in. I don't think you can do one without focusing on the other. So I think there are a lot of smart people who are making those decisions, and I think they realize that. And I think you can do both, and it doesn't just have to be either or.
Doesn't have to be either or. We're speaking with Pedro Cohen, the new head of LISC Jacksonville, the Local Initiative Support Corporation. And but as you said, this is work in neighborhoods. You work at this neighborhood by neighborhood, right?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the historic East Side is one of those neighborhoods that will directly benefit from a project like Lot J. So that's why I say that those things like Lot J, like the renovation of downtown, they have to be done with the neighborhoods, particularly those neighborhoods that sit very close in close proximity to Lot J and downtown. They have to be done in conjunction with those neighborhoods. They cannot be done as a separate one-off from those neighborhoods. So I'm excited about the possibility of what a Lot J will do for the historic East Side. And that, you know, quite frankly, historic East Side is one of those neighborhoods that we work in. Just like we work in Metro North, the area that surrounds Brentwood, we work in Springfield. So as Lot J goes, so does all of those neighborhoods as well.
Oh, so good to talk to you. And congratulations, Pedro. I look forward to seeing what you accomplish. Pedro Cohen, the new executive director of LISC Jacksonville. Thanks, Pedro.
Thank you, and have a great day, Melissa.
You too. Have a great holiday. Speaking of which, after the break, we'll tell you how you can pick up some luminaria kits for your front walk this season and support a great cause, too. A conversation with the CEO of Pinecastle. That's next. We'll be right back. It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robert Scott. I've been a sustaining supporter of WJCT for over 10 years now. I listen to WJCT all the time, and I have since I was a young adult. One of my favorite shows is actually a local show, and that's First Coast Connect. One of the great values, I think, is listeners are invited to call in. By the end of the hour, I'm definitely more informed about an issue. It's also made me think about it a lot deeper than I probably would have. This is WJCT News 89.9.
English composer Frederick Delius lived and worked in Florida in the mid-1880s. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, will discuss the man best known for composing the Florida Suite. We'll talk about the establishment of Seminole reservations and efforts to preserve Miami's historic Deauville Hotel. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. President-elect Joe Biden says he'll ask Americans to wear a mask for the first 100 days of his administration. It's an effort to slow the spread of COVID-19. We'll look at how mask guidelines are being implemented. Also, will surviving COVID be considered a pre-existing condition by health insurers? That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, Kate Winslet. She's starring in the new film Ammonite, which tells an imagined version of the life of Mary Anning, a 19th century self-taught paleontologist. In the film, Winslet's character has a passionate affair with a married woman played by Saoirse Ronan. Winslet's other films include Heavenly Creatures, Titanic, and Sense and Sensibility. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Mass transit is being pushed to the brink. Ridership and revenue is down, and the essential workers we all rely on can only do their work if they can get to work. Without federal aid, some are now taking drastic action, closing stations, ending routes, and running a skeleton service. Can mass transit come back from COVID? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the local nonprofit Pinecastle is selling something really cool right now. Some very affordable luminaria kits that benefit their mission. You can pick them up just in time to decorate your front walk this holiday season. I spoke about it with CEO Lorianne Whittington. Take a listen. Hey, Lorianne. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
So it's the time of year when we look forward to luminaria being displayed around the community. And one way people can get their hands on a luminaria kit is through your organization, Pinecastle. Tell us what you're up to.
Well, Pinecastle has been in the community for almost 70 years here in Jacksonville. And we are an organization that serves adults with intellectual and developmental differences. We offer them opportunities to learn, work, and connect. And one of the biggest things we do each year is we build these luminaria kits for the community. And each participant that works on the luminaria kits puts together 10 candles and 2 bags of sand and some white bags to put the luminaria in, along with a card that tells you a little bit about how the person works and who built your kit, so that you have a little sense of connection with the person that built your kit. And so a box of 10 kits sells for $10, so you can have 10 luminaria for your house or your business. And we have a lot of big customers that buy multiples for neighborhoods and all kinds of places.
Wow. Okay. So this is an easy way people can have some holiday fun, but also support your mission. Pinecastle serves adults with intellectual and developmental differences. Tell us about the mission of Pinecastle.
Well, we started out in 1952 with a group of 33 families that really had no options for their children with disabilities like Down syndrome, autism, cerebral palsy, those types of things. They put their funds together and bought our 10-acre property here on the south side, and they started focusing on what their children could do instead of what they couldn't do. And so today we still focus on that mission, although in the mid-60s when the school system started accepting children with differences, we switched our mission to work with adults. And ever since that time, we've turned into a daily training center for adult living as well as workforce training. We help our adults learn work skills, and the luminaria kits are part of that program where they learn how to do quality control, they learn how to follow directions, and they prepare themselves for ultimately jobs in the community.
So fantastic. Okay, so then how can we get our hands on these luminaria kits? What should people do to get their own?
Well, it's really easy. You can go to Pinecastle, which is one word, pinecastle.org/luminaria, LUMINARIA. And you can purchase kits online, and you can purchase multiples, and you have the option to pick them up here at our office at 4911 Spring Park Road, or we can ship them to you as well.
Very nice. And, you know, with the pandemic, the luminaria celebration in Riverside Avondale, I need to check and make sure that's still happening. But regardless, you can light your walkway for a good cause this holiday season, no matter where you live. So go to pinecastle.org/luminaria. You can get 12 luminaria for just $10 per kit, which is a great deal. pinecastle.org/luminaria. Check it out now online. And to CEO Lorianne Whittington, happy holidays to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate the opportunity.
So once you get those luminaria, you want to show them off, right? Well, we did check on this, and here's what you can do. The beloved holiday tradition for residents of Riverside Avondale to gather with neighbors and friends, socially distance, of course, or hang out in the neighborhood's parks and churches by walking the lighted sidewalks illuminated with candles. Yes, Luminaria is on this year in Riverside Avondale. The celebration begins at dusk on Sunday night, December 20th. Now, as we just heard, you can pick up your Luminaria kits through Pine Castle. You can also get kits at the Riverside Avondale Preservation Office on Herschel Street. So be part of it. It is a fantastic holiday affair. And this year will be a little different due to the pandemic. But since it's an outside event, mask up, distance, but go out and enjoy it. You can also head out to the beaches and check out the holiday lights of Deck the Chairs. They are celebrating their eighth season in the Seawalk and Latham Plaza Public Park in downtown Jacksonville Beach, where they light up lifeguard chairs. That's always a lot of fun. The Morocco Shrine Temple has a drive-through holiday light display. Check that out. There's another one. The Downtown Cathedral District has lit up all of their historic churches and cathedrals for the holidays. And they even have an audio tour you can download and listen to in your car as you drive through that neighborhood and take in the beauty of the cathedrals. And last but not least, the residents of Girvan Road in the Arlington Southside area, they have been voted as having the best holiday lights display in town. This street is a local legend, people. So take a spin down Girvan this season if you get a chance and check out the beauty of the lights. Have fun. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming. Feedback goes to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. You can catch our rebroadcast tonight or our podcast up later today, wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.